the ultimate prize. Capacity crowd. The grand final.
The Yates came off the wing and went straight for Dermot Brereton. Dermot's down on his knees, as you can see.
Gary Ablett will go very close from here, from about 52 metres. Long, probing kick, it's home. Down towards full forward, Brereton, a test here. He's taken the mark. What a courageous mark. Down in the first 15 seconds of the game. A chance to kick Hawthorne's second goal from 25 metres out. He's put it through. And Hughes comes away. There's the time remaining. The Cats are looking better. Hughes goes long down towards the pocket. Ablett! Oh, what a mark!
Ablett over the top. Snapshot by Gary Ablett. This is close. Oh, it is mercurial stuff.
Hawthorne player down off the ball. Missed down there in the pocket. Anderson scrambles towards goal. What a massive goal. Hughes gets around Lidner. Unloads into the forward line yet again. Kennedy in front. Ablett over the top. Oh, what a mark. To Anderson. Anderson 35 metres out and closing. Is he accurate? Yes, he is. Goes long down towards the pocket. Ablett is there. Almost the one-hander. Finds it on the ground. From 25 metres out, he's kicked it. His eighth goal. Hamilton behind, 40 metres out, open goal, it's home, another one.
The Hawks have the numbers on this Bemba's wing. Bacanara, over the top, Anderson, into an open goal goes Anderson, and it's there, Hawthorne by 17 points. Bounce favours Bruns. Bruns goes for goal. Brownless at the back, Ablett. Here goes Ablett for goal number 9, and he's threaded it. This could be another Geelong goal. There'll be only one kick in it if Scott can get the ball. He gathers well and kicks it to Cameron, who's marked 40 metres from goal. David Cameron has kicked 2.
Stop the clock. There's all but there as far as the Hawks are concerned. There's the siren. Hawthorne have won it by 6 points. A heart stopper. Ladies and gentlemen, you've just seen a classic.
Some regard the 1989 VFL Grand Final as the finest game ever played. A match where Hawthorne prevailed 21 goals 18, 144 to Geelong's 21 goals 12, 138. Hard to believe, but true. They were different times. Two of the players who were star components on that day were Hawthorne's youngster, the running man Dean Anderson, and Geelong ruckman Darren Flanagan. All right, Dean, I'm going to start with you because winners are grinners, as they say. Sadly, Darren, as he looks at me with a menacing scowl, we're going back to round 6 that year at Princes Park, which was really the beginning of what happened in the grand final. You didn't play in that game, Darren, but Dean did in his second year of footy. He's already starting to take the competition by storm with your elite running skills. Take us back to that round 6 game, which was a classical home and away encounter where there was how many goals kicked? I'm looking at it now. 26 goals, 15 Hawthorne, 171. Geelong, 25 goals, 13, 163. It's hard to believe, isn't it?
Yeah, look, John, I was 1989 was my first year where I'd hit my straps and was at that stage getting a regular game for the team, which for me was a real sense of achievement because it had taken so long to get there. I was an emergency in 1988 and missed that premiership over Melbourne, so I had to sit through that. And we lost our first game in 89 to Collingwood. I played that game. And, you know, you think at the time, have I missed it? Have I missed out on that glorious era? Which is only natural. But we did start to get going after that. It was a wonderful group we had. And that game at Princes Park in round 6 was, you know, you look back on your career, and I didn't play an enormous amount of games, but I was lucky enough to play in some fantastic games. And that was one of them. And you remember, like, Geelong at the stage were just so offensive and so powerful with their goal kicking. And I really surprised Hawthorne on the day with the way they came out of the gates. I think Scotty McGuinness might have had a challenging first half, but I can't remember how far we were down at half time, but it was a very big margin. But so what I took from it was Alan Jeans at half time, his composure. He's a Rolls Royce, Alan Jeans, and very composed, and how he got us to think and break the game down into the second half into components and not get too perturbed by the fact that we were so far behind, but just break it down into components and just bridge that gap over the journey. And that's what happened. And we got some momentum. We made some changes. I think Ayrsey went into the middle and we really got going. Dermot played a role, as he often did, with his physicality. And, the game was just swung and turned on its head very quickly.
You speak about how offensive Geelong was at that stage. You probably watched the game there, and I'm thinking you were injured.
Probably out of favour, I'm tipping.
No, you've been pretty good form, I would have thought, around that time. You and Damien Burke in the ruck. But there was a Geelong player who kicked 9 goals in that game. You'd think, was it Gary Ablett or Billy Brownless? It was neither of those. It was another country boy like yourself called
Gavin Exel,
which is amazing.
Yeah, because he was playing deep forward. I think Gary Ablett was playing on the wing.
I was on Gary.
Yeah, he was on
first
Dipper.
Place to play him, actually.
Yeah. And he went with Dipper to the – or Dipper went to the forward pocket and Gary went to the back pocket with him. So we lost a lot of drive around the centre of the ground. So it was a fairly smart coaching move that maybe in hindsight they would have left Gadger a little bit further up the ground.
Gary in a back pocket.
Yeah.
He wouldn't know how to find it.
No, well, he didn't know what to do back there. But, yeah, so that – we lost a lot of drive through the centre there. But, yeah, we had an enormous fire.
In that game, it was where Dermot – got Mark Yates near the boundary line and injured Yatesy, and that was where it was born from that moment on in Mark's mind. Did you know that at the time?
Yeah, I knew he'd clipped him, didn't know the severity of it and didn't know the follow-up, a little bit of the lip he got on the way off, which probably, yeah, Yatesy's a fairly fiery character and doesn't need a lot of incentive to come back pretty hard. So, yeah, when he had that sitting in his back pocket, I don't think it was much an issue to come back pretty hard at the start of the granny.
You could argue there was no more ferocious player in the competition that year than Dermot Brereton. Maybe Robert Tipimidico was in the same side. You hadn't experienced a lot of him, Dean. What was he like to play alongside?
Oh, look, for me, he was just like a big brother. I recall going to Hawthorne and I had a couple of options of clubs to stick with, and Dermot was the key person why I stayed. I decided to go to Hawthorne. I actually loathed Hawthorne as a kid. But the first impressions, which are so critical, were back then when it was easy to walk into a club. He was probably the one. So he had that capacity to put his arm around you and protect you in a sense and bring you along for the ride.
Was he in control when he was on the ground, or were the eyes rolling, the mouth frothing?
Oh, look, I think he'd agree that he was mad. Yeah, he was an absolute warrior on the field. And I remember speaking to David Grant, who was a really courageous St Kilda halfback flanker, and he said, of all the players in the competition, you just don't know where he's coming from. You know, for a courageous halfback flanker, you know, Dermot had that impact and that capacity to support the footy club at the time.
I think David Grant,
within the rules.
David Grant and Gary might have clashed in the 91 final out at Waverley. Does that ring a bell? And I think Gary got suspended for that particular when Tony Lockett kicked 9 and Billy kicked 8 or something like that.
A bit of a shootout.
Which was a great game. Leading into 89, did you feel you had the measure of Essendon? You proved that during the finals, in the second final after losing to them in the first. You beat Melbourne by a lot of goals, kicking huge goals. How did you feel about Hawthorne, Darren?
Oh, they were an enormous side. Their history through the 80s was huge. They had stars on every line, and sort of reflecting on coming in here today, and I think we're hopeful of winning. I reckon Hawthorne would have expected to win, and I reckon that's probably a little bit of a difference. But it was all about a shootout. Normally the ruck played behind the footy. Blighty had us playing forward of the footy so that they didn't have a spare, so it was all one-on-one all over the ground, leaving Mick Schultz or someone like that to do the ruck in the back half, and I was playing like a second centre half forward, so it was a little very, very different to what they do now. A lot of switch and run, certainly, if they kick 25, we'll try and kick 26. And that was his mantra.
That Hawthorn team included these blokes who went on to be named in the team of the century for Hawthorn: Langford, Ayres, Mew, Dipidomenico, Bacanara, Brereton, Dunstall, Tuck, Platten. And that's not including players like Andy Collins and John Kennedy, Dean Anderson, Darren Pritchard. I mean, Peter Curran, there's some wonderful players in that side. When you look back at it like that, that's as good a side as you'd ever run into, and you've ended up losing by a goal.
Yeah, they're a bit stiff because they got West Coast for 2 years when they had the super team, then they got Carlton in 95. So the four losses were against, arguably, really rare quality teams.
That was your first grand final, Dean. You won the second semi-final where you were named either best or second best out of Waverley, which must have been a great feeling of pride that you'd played in the final and knew you belonged?
Well, the first final, you know, to play in a final, but also play against Essendon and Kevin Sheedy. I remember Yabby on the phone to me on the Friday night, probably spent 40 minutes with me. He was absolutely paranoid about Kevin Sheedy and his moves. So for him to spend that much time with me, I was the youngest in the side. So just to be clear in his mind that I knew how Kevin Sheedy operated, it was a big thing. The Hawthorne Essendon rivalry was strong then. And obviously the Geelong, we kicked into Geelong after that, but we'll talk about that in a moment. But that game was for me, again, one of those great games. I mean Dermot went crazy with his physicality and had a massive impact on us winning. And we only just got over the line in the end. We got over the top of them, I think, a couple of goals in the end, 3 goals maybe. But it was a fantastic game. Yeah, I really enjoyed it.
And then the build-up to the 89 grand final, you'd gone out to Waverley, smashed Essendon, where Gary Ablett maybe played as good a game as you could ever see, where he kicked, Gary, 8 goals, had 25 possessions playing up the ground. And no one's ever seen putty like that, I wouldn't have thought.
Darren, no, he's a rare commodity. Yeah, he could do. He was the best kick in the club. He was the strongest in the club. He took more marks in the club. He hit harder than anyone else in the club. He was just the complete athlete.
What was he like to deal with personality-wise?
Oh, I got on really well with him. Yeah, he was a quiet country kid and, you know, he was really strong in his religion at that stage. And, yeah, I always had great rapport with him.
And then going into the actual grand final day for you, your memories lead into it?
Yeah, it was a big week. Yeah, the whole town of Geelong was out of control almost. Yeah, they had 25,000 at training and they were making banners to run through it for training sessions and that sort of stuff. So the hype was huge. Yeah, it was the first grand final that they were in for a long, long time.
Paul Couch won the Brownlow medal.
Couch won the Brownlow. That was probably the reason that, you know, they were a little bit concerned about Dermot coming off the back of the square because his physicality in centre bounces of, you know, if there's any sort of hold up in the stoppage, he was flying through at 1,000 mile an hour. So there was a bit of incentive there for Yachty to make sure that he didn't pick Couchy off early.
Did you know that was going to happen?
Yeah.
So you started off the ground.
Yeah, I was doing the first and third quarters on the bench and Berkey was doing second and fourth.
Did you specifically watch for that?
Oh, yeah.
So, hang on. So, Busey's got the ball, kicked the left foot.
And the Gazza takes the Gazza's mark. Go, well, missed all
well,
that.
That was good. But you're watching Yatesy run off the wing to where Dermot's coming in from centre half forward next to Mick Schultz. No, it wasn't actually.
Schultz.
Yeah. So, you're watching that, thinking, and, well, take us through it.
Well, I thought, oh, yeah, he's got him. And he was down. He sort of got back up, and he went back down again. And then I went back to the other end of the ground and watched. You know, Gazza slot it, and anyway, he picks himself up and staggers down to the forward pocket and managed to kick a couple. And
where were you doing when it happened?
Well, I was on the line. It's probably fair to say Dermot deserved that. He actually got me one day. You know, he really, for midfielders who were getting close attention, yeah, that was his art. And some players squealed like pigs. You hit them that hard, but he hit me once. He missed my opponent and got me accidentally. So, you know, Probably didn't cop the full impact, but he certainly had some power. Yeah. But
so
I was next to him. I was on the
it?
Line, but I was charging in to get the footy.
Yep.
So I missed it. Yeah.
And then you were aware he was on the ground after Gary kicked the goal.
Yeah.
What sort of impact does that have on you that your hero's fallen?
I mean, I'll take a step back. We watched the Geelong preliminary final, and you asked the question before about how did you feel about going in against Hawthorn, and certainly Hawthorn were in fear of Geelong, absolutely in fear. And Darren, you know, Yabby was very conscious of your ruck power, very conscious of that. And, you know, the display that Gary was putting on through the final series was intimidating.
It was fun,
you know, his preliminary final was extraordinary. And then the start of the game in the grand final, I was only young, and it was to see Dermot down and see the roar of the crowd when Geelong kicked the first goal in, I think it was inside a minute. It was, it had an impact.
Interesting you say the ruck power. So that's Darren Flanagan who's next there.
Yep.
And Damien Burke, who was at the peak of his powers at the time. It must make you feel good, actually, to hear that. Yeah, he James was worried about you there.
That's a reasonable pat on the back, that is.
Well, you played accordingly because Damien got injured late in the first quarter.
Yeah, he didn't come back on. So
with an ankle, I think, and then you rucked the rest of the game against Greg Deer, maybe?
Yeah, played on Deary the whole game. Madigan. Came off the bench and
That's right.
Came a bit of a chop out for a little while.
After Dermot went down, there were spot fires everywhere, Dan. There was one on the centre wing between Dipper, with Buddha had run in and tried to decapitate him, because Buddha's, I reckon his eyes would have been rolling like Dermot's, and Busey was playing. He'd run in as well, and Neville Bruns was playing on Dipper, and Dipper had him in a headlock at one stage, and they went to the ground. George Stone, your runner, came running in, and then Barry Stoneham and Chris Muir arrived. There was sand on the ground because it had been such a wet year. I don't know if you remember that on grand final, but there was sand everywhere.
They actually shut the ground for a while there.
Yeah, they did. They closed, that's right.
I reckon in the state games when
Tony Hall
got injured.
Did his knee, yeah.
Yeah, Tony Hall was playing for South Australia and was tackled by his teammate from Hawthorn in Andy Collins, and barely did his knee. He was a star. So Tony Hall didn't play in the game. Mm. I mean, you think what a good player he was. But, yeah, that happened early. Were you conscious of the physical side of it early on? You were a ball player, a running ball player.
Yeah, look, physicality wasn't my strength, let's be honest.
I wasn't saying that, but yes, you didn't. That's not how you played footy.
But having said that, I think going out and playing in those days, it was gladiatorial. So there was an awareness that it was tough out there, and it was fast. The game was fast. It was get the ball and get it forward. So the running capacity that was required was quite intense, you know, the running side of it. So you were aware of the physicality. But you're sort of in the moment, though. You play in the moment and you just get on with it.
You were playing half-forward change with Buchanan on ball?
Yeah, look, I started half-forward. John Platten was concussed in the first quarter. So, you know, we talk about Dermot getting hurt, but we also lost the All-Australian Brownlow medalist, probably best rover in the competition at the time. So he went down in the first quarter. So that restructured things. You know, quarter time, we got a good start, so that mitigated our injury position somewhat, but there was an awareness that we only had 20 players.
And you were six goals up at quarter time.
Yeah. So we got a good start, and a lot of it was just through some free kicks and probably keeping our focus more on playing rather than the physicality side of it.
And you had a lot of players who'd been in four or five grand finals previously, from 83 onwards through to 89.
Yeah.
You didn't have players who'd been in grand finals at all. Looking back, do you think that perhaps some of the players went over the top with the physicality?
Yeah, it wasn't part of our normal game. Like, we were just a free-running, high-scoring game, team. And, yeah, we knew it was going to be a brutal game. And, like you say, most of the games in those days were fairly brutal. As far as, the balls to be won, you just went pretty hard at it. But once the ball's in the open, it was pretty free-flowing. But so the actual to run around and trying to clip blokes was not normal for us. But sitting on the bench and watching the whole first quarter, I'm thinking, wow, this is pretty serious out there, because there was a lot of really heavy clashes, and, Dipper punctures the lungs, and Yatesy gets Dermy, and I guess he did a hammy.
Quarter, did a quad.
Yeah, and, Rat was out, knocked out. And
he didn't know where he was.
Buddha had teeth dislodged, and it was just a brutal game of footy. I worked with Johnny Hook for a number of years, and we were sort of trying to work out if it had been a draw, how many players wouldn't have played the next week.
Three suspensions and injuries.
It was about five or six each.
Well, you were Michael Tuck, Platten, Dipper, Dermot, Greg Deer, I think, towards the end.
Ayres.
Split Webbing, somebody. That was
Tuck. Tuck, yeah. Split Webbing,
I would have sewn that up.
Dipper got rubbed out and had a week, couldn't have played anyway with his punctured lung. And then you guys had, I reckon, Buddha was rubbed out.
Buddha was no good. Berkey did his knee.
Yep.
Tim Darcy did an ankle. Who else was there? Yeah, there was about five in each team that would not have come up the next week. So,
what would have happened next week?
Probably another draw.
Well, the sides were that close, weren't they?
Yeah, our twos played in the grand final that day, so we had plenty of fit soldiers in pretty good nick at the stage.
Yeah, I think we would have been in trouble.
Yeah.
Yeah, fair to say.
You reckon?
I mean, we had some depth. There were some good players that missed out, but there's a lot of momentum with Geelong, even through the game, the way you came over the top.
Half time, Dean, you went in 12-9-7-2, so you're six goals and a bit up. What was the feel like at half time?
John, I think it was a bit like what I said before, the group was composed. You know, my recollection of the day, I mean, I'm up at 4:30 in the morning shitting myself, excuse the French, but couldn't sleep, turned the TV on, watched the footy marathon. It's Hawthorn against Essendon, the last quarter in 1984 when Hawthorn sort of sunk and Essendon just went over the top. So there's, for me, the actual composure within the group, what resonated really early was that I was in good company. And we had, to Darren's point before, the difference probably between the two sides was we had a lot of composure, and that went right through to Yabby as the coach running the ship. But halftime was the pay the price speech. Yeah, so that's the big memory of halftime. And
the boy with the shoes.
That's the one. Yeah,
you want to pay extra money to get the best shoes, best quality, or take the cheap way out. Is that effective?
It's basically just don't have any regrets.
Yep.
Yeah, with the decisions you make, and it was inspirational. You don't remember too many coaching speeches, but you don't forget that one. That was a good one.
Malcolm Bligh? Kick goals.
Yeah. Well, before the game, it was about the opportunity and the occasion, but at quarter time, it was about to stop going backwards. You have to break even for a while, and that was the focus of the second and third quarters. Was let's not keep going backwards. Let's break even and try and at least maintain where we're at. And I think we actually achieved that throughout the second and third quarters, where we didn't go any further backwards. And then it was just, let's see where we can get to from here. And we really only got within, a couple of goals with a couple of minutes to go. It was always, we'd get within two, then they'd kick one, and we'd get back within two, and they'd kick. And we finally got back within a goal, and there's only seconds left. So,
well, by three-quarter time, Darren, you'd made up 4 points from quarter time. So 8-4 at quarter time to 2 goals straight, and then it's 18-13 to 13-7. So really the game had maintained its status quo.
Mm.
And then in the last quarter, well, you're still running Dean Anderson because of you're a schoolboy champion at Caulfield Grammar. You probably had a couple of others who had a bit of run left, but not too many others, I don't think. Geelong were finishing, weren't they? They had the fresh legs.
Oh, what was the gap at three-quarter time? Five goals?
Six goals exactly.
Yeah, no. No, there was a clear awareness. I mean, I think the one thing that could have killed us would have been if there was an awareness that Dipper was in trouble.
You didn't know that?
No, not as a player.
Is that right?
No, I didn't know that. I don't know if he knew what was going on, to be honest. But he kept motoring in the last quarter. But so if you get to three-quarter time, you probably lose a bit of hope, if you got so many challenges. But you're right. The ability for us to keep covering the ground and keep kicking goals,
which
was
did.
Important.
Yeah, and you might have got a couple yourself or Bucky, I think.
Yeah.
For the record, Dipper got back into Geelong's forward line. Gary Ablett came out with a hip and shoulder, crashed into his back, which these days would be illegal. At the time, it probably wasn't seen that way. It was a marking.
Free kick at best.
And in that, he punctured his lung and remarkably played out the rest of the game with a punctured lung. And as you say, Dean, he had 3 shots on goal in the last quarter, which is extraordinary for Mike.
He was a bull,
He really was. But Geelong, for every one goal you got, Geelong, we're getting two in the last quarter.
That's it. Yeah. Oh, no, there's a clear awareness. I mean, the crowd, the MCG, it's a wonderful place to play, but the crowd was on Geelong.
Is that right?
Well, the roar of the Geelong goals was much louder than the roar of our goals.
So that's the neutrals, I reckon. Hawthorn have had so much success.
Probably, the neutrals. Yeah.
Because you don't get
it. And it made it exciting too, the fact that it was getting closer and closer. Look, to the point that we were a couple of ways that little bit of a bridge too far, it seemed. Well, I don't know. It just seemed the feel was that Geelong could kick goals quickly, and they did. So
there was that nervousness
around hanging on and, how are we going to get through this?
A number of really crucial contests where Gazza got kicked 2 one-on-one with Chris Langford. And Langford, I think he won 3 in about 5 minutes one-on-one, which Gazza wins one of those. It's all of a sudden it's a different ball game. But, it was a superstar team we were playing against. But, interesting, the crowd, I have no recollection of the crowd whatsoever. It was one of those 6 fortunate games in your career where you play in the perfect bubble and you don't hear a thing.
Your first final?
My first grand final, yeah.
First final, full stop.
First final was the
loss. In 1989 was your first final series.
Yeah.
So nerves on grand final day. You're so easy going, big bush boy from Katamatoa, big dairy farm.
I never got nervous before a game. I was fairly lucky like that. Other people were throwing up in the toilets, and I'm just sitting on the bike listening to a bit of music.
It's unusual. What would you be listening to? A bit of John Williamson or something? No. Country land.
I think it'd be mid 80s. Rock some Cold Chisel or maybe some Old Eagles or
K-San.
Something along those lines. Last quarter, did you think there was enough time? David Cameron ended up having kicked a goal with a minute to go.
Yeah.
You don't know the time?
No, it wasn't. The clock was just ticking up. We didn't know how long was left. I don't think there was any, you know, digital clock on the bench telling us how long to go. We knew it was, you know, we're running out of time, so running out of opportunity. So, yeah, it was the first time we actually got within striking distance of halving or winning the game. The rest of the time we're still just chasing.
I guess the thought was get the ball down somewhere towards number five. It was Gary Ablett, and hopefully he could create some more magic. Even then, he would have been scores level. But Hawthorn, I don't know if you were even conscious of it, Dean, but there are so many players around the ball in that last 30 seconds. Andrew Beer's got the ball, but there was nowhere for him to go.
Yeah, no, very conscious of that. Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, they were very good. I think Peter Curran was good. Dipper was good. Yeah, no. They were experienced players.
They were
experienced players. And to the point about knowing what time of game, no idea how long to go. Runners had no idea. So it was an awareness of the clock. That was it. You know, 20 and whatever minute mark. It's all and even that, you could barely sort of see, you know, the old style clock. Yep. You know, you could just see that the needle was in the red somewhere. Yeah.
So. And there was no time off for stoppages in those days. It was, you know, the clock just kept ticking away. Mm. So, you know, kill the contest, get repeat stoppages, run it down.
You blokes went back to Geelong, and I remember you'd been introduced up on the stage. I think it might have been Ian Cover actually introduced at the Town Hall. And it was as if you'd won a premiership.
Yeah.
It was wrong, really, when you look back on it. But I know the players, some of them thought, well, what are we doing here? We've lost the game. Mm. Do you remember it? And there were thousands of people there.
Yeah, there was 20,000 people in the street, and there was a balcony up the top of Town Hall, and they introduced us all. And it was great acknowledgement for what we'd achieved that year, but we'd still lost. It was a bit surreal, for want of a better, I don't know what the right word is, but, you know, great achievement to get there, to challenge, you know, one of the great dynasties, but we still lost, you know, and what do? You know, you try and saddle up again next year and do it again, and you know, don't dwell on the loss, but don't, you know, do your head in either.
I think you said, and you've probably had a reunion this year, I think, for 1989.
Yeah, we have, yep.
30 year. When those players get together, and a lot of those blokes have played in premierships before that year, you hadn't. Does the 81-9 one stick out a bit when you hear them talking? Or?
Yeah, it's interesting. It depends on the player.
Yep.
Yeah. I think it sticks out for the actual event. The event, arguably the football club's greatest premiership. The courage that was shown across the team to actually hold on. Some of these boys who played in the sand and, you know, fighting in the sand during the game. I mean, some of the stories get embellished a little bit, but at the end of the day, people could see what was going on, and it was a courageous win. So I think holistically the group looks at it and goes, that was a big win for the Hawthorn Footy Club. And from a club perspective, it was a great win. Some of the guys had better games in other games, and, you know, they say that the 88 premiership team was the best team that Hawthorn ever put on the park. And, you know, the result sort of confirmed or put that team into a special category. But, it depends on the player. John Platten plays half a quarter. So for him, you know, it's not as big a thing as it is for me, probably.
When people meet you now, hear the name Dean Anderson, and they meet you and think you're Eric Banner probably half the time, because you do. Is that fair, Darren? He looks a bit like Eric Banner, doesn't he? Don't earn as much money.
He's much better looking than Eric Banner.
He is better looking, but there is a similarity there.
Yeah, I get that a lot.
Sure. Did you know?
Thought the better looking than Eric Banner.
Yeah, exactly. do they hear the name Dean Anderson, do they relate to 89? Is that the game that would come up, typically? You did kick four
goals.
Yeah,
look, I'm a minnow in the game, so... funny thing, my career. I didn't get to play the 100 games at Hawthorn.
That's Hawthorn's fault, because I should say that, because Darren now works in the under-18 system with Danny Yong Sinrose in talent identification. There's a young kid called Noah Anderson.
Yeah, we know about Noah Anderson.
We don't know. Noah's the son of Dean Anderson, who's sitting with us at the moment, who was going to be taken in the high up in the draft. And because you only played 80, how many games?
83.
Gee,
a few good ones in there, though, John.
Exactly. Well, they could have revisited, because you went on to play a number of games with St Kilda after
that's
that.
That's right, yeah.
And you had a lot of footy left in you. So, you know, that's one of those ones.
That's another topic conversation. Yeah. It's quite a deep one for me. But
are you a Hawthorn supporter?
Well, I'm on the St Kilda board now.
Yeah,
I've been on there for a few years.
So you couldn't
St Kilda's been good. St Kilda's been a good club to me.
Yep.
Yeah.
And you played there and then stayed, and now you're with the board.
I'm very passionate about the Saints.
Are you involved in the coaching decision?
Yeah.
Can you give us a tip?
I'll give you a tip in a couple of weeks.
Okay, thanks. You've got my number there, so there's no excuse for you there. You played around 130-odd games for Geelong.
Yep.
And you had a very good career. I'm thinking, though, people probably remember you 489 because you played so well in that game. I mean, I know, which is a bit unfair because do you ever...
Well, I didn't play many good ones, so...
you're talking yourself there.
Modest.
You must be proud of your performance.
Yeah, I think that, you know, the fact that we're here having this discussion 30 years on about the place where this game sits in the footy history. You know, did you do a 30-year review of the 1988 grand final or 87 or 86? Mm. Probably not, but because of the high scoring, the melodrama around it, all the little subplots and the number of superstars who played, and the fact that it was such a brutal game of footy, it's still revered as one of the best grand finals in history.
Yeah, well, to your point before, what are people, do they, you know, the Eric Banner thing or the grand final thing, it's probably it's probably a line ball decision as to what comes up most, but the grand final does come up a lot. And for me, being like a very low profile, I don't do any very few of these type of events, but as a very low profile contributor on the day, it's still meaningful in my life around conversation and workplace. Everywhere I turn, it's just such a passionate culture in this state.
It's there. You kicked four goals. Gary Bucanara kicked four. So it's eight between you. It was running half forwards on balls. Mm. Bruce Lindner played a wonderfully attacking game for Geelong in the unlikely position of halfback flank, which was another Malcolm Blight type genius stroke move, if you like. How many did you and Bucky kick on Bruce?
I'm going to look after him.
No, it wasn't that many.
No, I was on a few players, in fairness to Bruce. He did have a great game. I was on a few players. Bucky will say kick four on Bruce, but I was on Mark Boss initially, and for old Boss, he was coming to the end of his career, and I was just running around crazy. And I had Bossy sweating a bit. It was probably not the right matchup, but
warm
I was
day.
On Busey for a bit. So, yeah.
Warmish day.
Yeah, warm day. I think, you know, if I think back, I used to actually get absolute shocking stomach pain after a game.
Okay.
So I remember that game. It was warmish.
Yeah, it was hot.
Warmish. And I just sat in the rooms for probably an hour. I could not move with pain just through the exhaustion of just running all day. You know, we didn't come off the ground.
No, we didn't.
But, you know, just, you know, expectation to just run as hard as you could. And the pain afterwards was, that wasn't the only time, but that was a big day for pain for me, just in terms of exhaustion. The diets weren't 100%.
Yep.
So the actual education that the boys get today wasn't the same. Yeah. Wasn't the same then.
It's interesting you say that, because you'd think in the euphoria of winning a grand final like that, the adrenaline would kick in and you'd be up with the champagne, the rest of it. Paul Couch, a dear friend of ours, Darren, who sadly is no longer with us, Couchy, after that game, I interviewed him in the rooms and said, what did you think of Gary Ablett? He said, how many did he kick? And I said, well, how many do you think he kicked? And he said, four or five. And he wasn't being silly. He had no idea, because he was so into the game and then totally exhausted at the end of it. I don't know. Would you have known what Ablett was up to?
Oh, the actual number, no, but I just know that he was on.
Yeah,
yeah, we really had a fair idea. He was kicking a few.
It's curious to go back to Bruce. Bruce's theory of defending was he's inside, I've got him covered. You know, he could be 100 metres away. But it's interesting the way they play their halfback flankers now with really good kickers outside, maybe not having a great defensive mindset, but trying to get the ball in their hands. And he was such a beautiful kick, I think. So maybe Blotty was 30 years ahead of his time. I remember that boundary throw-in where, you know, sort of, position Greg Deer out of the way, and I think I've got this covered. I'll drop it on my hip here, and then all of a sudden someone jumps on my head and lands on the ground and kicks, and I'm thinking, who in the hell was that? And it was Gazzo. What on Gazzo?
Oh, he was amazing.
You just do stuff like that, and nine straight as well, like, you know, from all angles, left foot, right foot, snaps, set shots.
Well, Dean was saying Scotty McGuinness is a wonderful
Scotty and Langer's, they debate that issue most times I see them. Who was the most effective? Yeah, no, it's quite funny that.
If you could change one thing, Darren, other than the final score, about 89, what would it be?
I probably would have handballed a Brunsy in the second quarter instead of having a shot from the run that went out the full. Okay. So that's one.
Yeah.
And then I hit the post in the third. So, you know, 1-1 and one out in the full. If I had kicked 2-1 or handballed one to Brunsy, it might have changed things around.
How often did you think about that?
Rarely.
Yeah. Only when it hits like my ass.
You just look at every – when a game's that close, every missed opportunity and every missed goal and every goal you give up, it means the difference in the game. So, yeah, you can look back at every event that happened throughout the whole course of the game and think, well, that's – cost us a game, all that.
We've all been on both sides, haven't we, that sort of thing.
I don't think there's any reason for you to change anything from the game.
I missed one.
Yeah.
Yeah, five would have been nice, but Andy Gower said to me before the game, I want to see a left-foot banana from the boundary. And I kicked a left-foot flat punt mongrel thing from the boundary that went straight through the middle. It was extraordinary.
Maybe the only time in your career, did you ever do it again?
Oh, not like that. It was an absolute fluke.
Have you watched
straight
the game?
Straight through the middle and just dropped over the line.
Have you watched the game very often or recently or any reason to?
Oh, no. I think the last time we were together at the 10-year anniversary, Darren, was when I last watched it fully.
How many children do you have, Dan?
I've got three.
And I guess the kids would have watched it on the way up. Because kids...
In fact, my second boy, 16-year-old, only realised last year that I played in two premierships.
I have it on high rotation.
Yeah,
they
put you back into place pretty quickly, the kids, don't they?
Darren, your how many children?
I've got a daughter, 19.
Yeah, and is she aware of ADR?
I think she, my wife sat down with her to watch it in when she was about 12 and halfway through the first quarter when I still hadn't got on, she got up and left the room. So I'm fairly sure Lila hasn't seen the game either.
Youth of the world.
Yeah.
Thanks very much for coming in. I really enjoyed the conversation, even if the score hasn't changed, Darren, for Geelong people.
I'm pleased you to make me sit through it again, that's all.
No, not the vision, but it's you two played an integral part in the game. And I know deep down you're not two people who are overly confident or talk about yourselves, but you must have that proudness that you were part of a magnificent game. And it's irrespective of the final score, it'll always be up there. People will talk about the great grand final. I was a kid in 1970, went to that grand final. That was hard to beat Collingwood Carlton. 1984, Essendon Hawthorn was a classical game. But 1989 sticks above them for me. And Dean Anderson with four goals and named in Hawthorn's best two, I think, alongside Darren Pritchard. And Darren Flanagan going into the ruck after a quarter time and naming Geelong's best two behind a bloke called Ablett. You should feel very proud of yourself. Thanks very much for coming in.
Absolute pleasure.
Thanks, John.